To a certain degree, I'm glad that we can be done after this weekend talking about State Senator Nicole Mitchell and this nonsense that she was not trying to take some stuff from her stepmother. It's Jason. Welcome to Drive Time Hour 3. Just within the last hour or so, the verdict was announced at a courtroom in Detroit Lakes. It is a sad story. It is personally heartbreaking. The family tragedy, the stepmother going through Alzheimer's, waking up in the middle of the night to find someone dressed in all black, and it turns out to be your stepdaughter. Oh, my gosh. It's awful. Just tell the truth. Just tell the truth. I am not with those of you who are like, a criminal's a criminal. She broke the law. Let's be real. This is a personal tragedy that led to an incredibly reckless, potentially dangerous, horrible decision. And if she would have just owned up to it, I find it hard to believe that we would be where we are today. The latest is that Aaron Murphy, the majority leader, expects State Senator Mitchell to resign. There'll be a special election. Woodbury will get a chance to vote. And we do have a very divided state Senate. So there is no doubt that the politics around this situation have really dictated a lot of how this has played out. Spring of 2024 is when this all happened, when she was arrested, when she was charged. She did not resign in a year that Democrats thought they would need her vote. If Mitchell does resign, the Minnesota Senate will be locked at 33 Democrats, 33 Republicans until there's a special election in Woodbury. Let's talk about some other stories making news today. It is time for the D-Rush Hour News Headlines. The lead.
Now, time to get you caught up on some of the biggest stories of the day. These are the D-Rush Hour Headlines.
Good evening. Our top story.
This just in.
Our top story.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin with the lead.
And the lead story in this segment is the massive elimination of funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That is the unit that funds National Public Radio, NPR, and PBS, the public television system. I have said that I think here in the Twin Cities, TPT, NPR should have to compete in the public marketplace. This is not 50 years ago, 60 years ago, when there, you know, weren't as many options. Today, there are a ton of options. The marketplace should decide. But there are parts of our state and parts of our country where public radio in particular is a real lifeline for the community. And I am concerned about what is next for those communities. And that's why we bring in our expert on the subject, Sarah Bignall, who is from KAXE, which is one of the oldest or the oldest rural community radio station in the country. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Yes, we are the first rural community radio station. We will be celebrating our 50th anniversary and coming up in April.
KAXE serves northern Minnesota, so Grand Rapids, Brainerd, that part of the state. And what does this mean to your FM budget, losing this federal funding?
You know, it's a really big hit to our budget. The CPB funding accounts for about 13% of our operating budget. But aside from the dollars, the CPB does provide other services that are collectively negotiated on behalf of CPB recipients, including music licenses. They also coordinate EAS services for us and also interconnection, meaning how we're able to download our programming. And as a small station, you know, if that's something that we would have to be coordinating on our own, is very costly to, you know, stations that operate on razor thin margins.
Is there, you know, and you heard what I said about here in the big cities, right, where there are a lot of radio stations. Do I think public television and public radio bring unique things to the table? Absolutely. Do I think their audience will step up and support and either donate or figure out, you know, new sponsorship models? Yeah, I think they're going to be okay. I do worry about radio stations like yours where, I don't know, is there someone who can step in and cover sort of the things that you cover when it comes to weather updates, local journalism, the kind of things that you guys do at KAXE?
The answer is no. You know, if you look at northern Minnesota, there's a couple of television outlets that exist up here, but they're in the Duluth-Superior area. Then there is a PBS station over in Bemidji. And newspapers are closing up there as well.
That is right.
You know, so really, you know, we're one of the few organizations that are there to update you with the wildfires that were happening in St. Louis County. You know, we were giving updates of evacuation zones and where people could go to get resources. And the recent wind events that happened in Bemidji that just completely destroyed that town. You know, we've been providing the ongoing where you can drop off your tree debris, loan programs that are available to residents who are having to, like, rebuild and, you know, fix their homes. And we've also had conversations around the loss of trees. You know, people are mourning these beautiful 100-plus-year-old trees in their yard, and we're able to hold conversations around that.
What are you guys going to do? I guess, you know, sometimes I wonder, like, how do the machinations actually work? When do you lose this money? What is your expectation as to how this is going to shake out? Because this is, you said, what, about 14% of your budget? Significant.
Yeah, it is a big portion of that. So when the Public Broadcast Act of 1967 was created to fund public media, they had done so with a 2-year forward appropriation of funds. And yeah. So for decades, we've been able to budget knowing that these funds had been put aside, you know, 2 years in advance. So it was a really nice, stable, you know, kind of guaranteed portion of our budget. And so with this passing here at the end of July, our fiscal year starts on October 1, and that's when those CPB funds would start coming in. So we have a really narrow window here that we're trying to figure out, you know, how to backfill that and stay afloat.
If you want to help, there's a big yellow donate button right on the top of KAXE.com. So if people want to support it, what you do is I think it's critically important. When I think of public broadcasting, and the reason this has become such a political hot potato is not because of KAXE. You know what I mean? It's because of national stuff. But what you guys are doing is so critical in local communities and commercial. I'm on a commercial radio station. We're not going to fill that gap. We just aren't.
No. And you know, we provide kind of a voice of a community, and we have. You know, we do reporting. We have journalists that are out there doing really good work. But we also on Saturdays have a trivia call-in show to which people call in from their fish houses, their boats, around their campfires. You know, and you won't get that on a commercial radio station. You just won't.
Sarah, I appreciate what you and your team does, and keep fighting the good fight. And if anyone will figure it out, it'll be our community broadcasters around the state, no doubt. Sarah Bignall from KAXE. We appreciate it. Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks, Jason.
All right. Next up in the lead is a massive moment for the city of St. Paul. The Yacht Club Festival, the Minnesota Yacht Club Festival, is happening right now. Tens of thousands of people filling St. Paul, and it's a massive effort to get a Harriet Island Regional Park ready to go. Andy Rodriguez, the director of Parks and Recreation for the city of St. Paul, has been on the front lines of that. He's with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Andy, how is it going?
They're going amazing. It's a steady flow of folks throughout the day. Gates opened around 12:30, but a lot of local acts starting off the day and then working our way up to Sheryl Crow, Train, and others. Alabama Shakes as a headliner.
When you look at getting ready for this out at Harriet Island Regional Park, from the park perspective, what's the number one thing that kind of kept you up late at night or had you worried?
Well, last year we had the flood, right?
Right,
and there was
yes.
a lot of preparation and things that we had to do in a very quick hurry. This year, we were lucky with Mother Nature, so avoided that hurdle, but just it's the logistics, right? Making sure that all the equipment and things gets here on time and, you know, the safety plans are in place across all the different agencies. But can't say enough about C3 and their organization of events. They definitely know what they're doing, and they make this so easy. So shout out to them.
And C3, like, they do Lollapalooza, they do Austin City Limits. I mean, this is what they do, so they get it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. To have that level of institutional knowledge and experience is so valuable. It makes the city side of things so much easier, but we really play a role in helping streamline processes for them, too, when it comes to permits, you know, your Department of Safety inspections, your safety plans,
sure,
all those
sure.
things.
35,000 or so people out there, this going on all weekend. For you, I mean, is this exciting to just see so many people? Harriet Island is such a treasure. It's such a great park. To have so many people enjoying it, I think, has got to be special for you, right?
Oh, it's an amazing feeling just to see all these people out here utilizing the park like they are. And, you know, just seeing the aerial photos of a mass of folks within the space is just it brings a positive feeling to me. And all the hard work that our teams do to get ready, you know, and even our partners too, like the Paddleford and others who have been here for over 50 years, like that, like participating in something like this is amazing. You know, they talk about Riverfest back in the 90s, Whitney Houston, all those, like, people have fond memories of those things. And this has a lot of history as a musical space.
Andy Rodriguez is with us from the city of St. Paul Parks. You know, does this generate some money to help you out kind of as you look at programming and taking care of the other park facilities in St. Paul?
Absolutely. Through permit fees and other things, it definitely generates some revenue from us. But the bigger picture is the economic impact for downtown, right? Like, our businesses, our hotels are so happy during this weekend, especially expanding to 3 days, you know, just seeing all the food trucks lined up on Kellogg Avenue, hotels busy, restaurants busy, bars, yeah. Like, everyone's happy. And that's what we want.
That's cool. And we want them to come back, right? Like, understand how much great stuff is going on over there that people enjoy it this weekend, but then come on, make another trip back to St. Paul.
Exactly. Check out Lower Town Sounds or other, you know, more on the local concert scenes that we do, Amsterdam and others. It's there's a lot to do down here, and hopefully people stick around for future weekends.
Do you get to hear any of the music? Is there anybody you're looking forward to hearing or seeing this weekend?
You know, Weezer and Green Day, I want to say those are the first albums I ever bought in junior high. So I'm looking forward to that. There's definitely some nostalgia there for me. So
yes.
It'll be a good time.
I get it. It's similar. I suspect we're similar ages, Andy. It's right in the, that is right. Right in the wheelhouse for us, isn't it?
Exactly. So, yeah, core memories for me. I'm looking forward to those performances, and then Sheryl Crow as well. And, yeah, it should be a good time.
Really good. Well, congratulations on getting everything ready, and let's hope for a smooth kind of normal weather weekend for you.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Andy Rodriguez with St. Paul Parks. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, take care.
That is the D Rush Hour News headlines, the lead. Page 2 coming up in just a minute. What caused that boil order that affected tens of thousands of people in the Twin Cities suburbs? We're number 2 in what? And a heartwarming story about seniors and students coming together in Rochester when we come back. D Rush Hour News headlines, page 2. So grateful to everybody who streamed our show live today on X, on YouTube at the WCCO radio account, and on Facebook. So, what caused that boil order that affected tens of thousands of people in the Twin Cities suburbs?
Never had a boil advisory before.
There's not much you haven't seen.
Legitimately, uh-oh, and I had to do some more research right away.
Kent Garbers, the owner of Frankie's in New Hope, says water is a key ingredient.
Oh, it's a critical. Not only do you use it for, you know, boiling pasta and things like that, or manufacturing the dough that we make, sanitation, hand cleaning, everything, ice, it's a big part of it.
Carol Evan, Jessica Hart, the reporter, with a story in New Hope. She was interviewing just a great guy. Frankie's, you ever been to Frankie's?
I have. It's a really good spot.
And that was as the owner of Frankie's, who is a super great dude. So it was a computer glitch. Computer problem that shut down the water for Golden Valley, New Hope, and Crystal. Different parts of the system. So they got a couple of water towers, three different water towers, but the computer stopped communication between different parts of the system. So valves automatically closed in two water towers. So that cut them off for the rest of the system. In Golden Valley, they manually opened a valve, which recharged the system. It's not like the water. When you turn on your faucet, it's not like it comes right out of the water tower. It's in the system, but you got to keep it charged to keep it flowing. And whenever pressure drops below 20 PSI, they say there's a risk, small, but a risk that contaminants can enter the system. That triggered the boil advisory. Feels like it should be a little, I don't know, shouldn't be so delicate, our system. We are, oh, by the way, the water's fine. It yes. happened Sunday, Monday, and then they said, the city of Minneapolis has the good lab. The water lab, they said, nope, you're fine. And then it was fine. We are number two.
Don't listen to these people, Ricky. You're a winner. You got the gift. Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. 10 best. How do we feel about the 10 best? It's fun and it's stupid is how I feel about it. This is like, this is the, actually, you know what? I hate this stuff. Because it's the listification of our world. Everything has to be a list. Everything has to be a public vote.
Yeah.
10 best malls in the U.S. that elevate the shopping experience. And then there's a category for everything. Yeah. Why not just 10 best malls? No. 10 best malls of the U.S. that elevate the shopping experience. So who cares?
Yeah, who?
And how are we number two? This is outrageous. This is why people like
that. I don't think Mall of America struggles with the shopping experience. I think they're doing just fine.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's apparently because we're number two.
We're number two. I mean, Bring Me the News had the story. USA Today is who runs this scam called the America's 10 Best Contest. Whenever you hear somebody saying, we're one of the 10 best in America, just know that means you're one of the 10 best at getting dingbats to vote for you in a poll. That's all. That's what it means. Now, if I were number one in any poll, I would be crowing about it just like every other loser, you know? Bring Me the News, reporting that Mall of America named the number two mall in the United States that elevates the shopping experience. And why not? You got your Nickelodeon Universe. You got Moose Mountain mini golf.
Love
got a
it.
Bunch of great restaurants. Mm-hmm. Lots of new stores. USA Today's 10 best. 32 million people visit the mall. It's one of the top tourist destinations in the country. I actually am a big Mall of America fan. I think it gets unreasonable hate by people who are pretending to be cool. But like the stores in the mall are great. There's a lot of great food.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful Apple store out there. The Lego store is great fun.
Most of the hate comes from people that haven't been there in 30 years.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
Number one is the Aventura Mall.
Yeah.
In Florida, largest mall in the state of Florida. They have the first Eataly. Do you know Eataly? It's in like New York and Chicago. It's like, it's sort of it's an Italian.
I think Vegas might have one too.
Vegas has one. It's a food hall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All not like different. There are different concepts, the same owners, but there's like grocery store, meat market. It's pretty cool. Aventura. Where is Aventura? It's near Miami. Near Miami.
La-da-da.
Some seniors and some students coming together to do something really cool in Rochester.
Feels good because knowing that you're helping always feels good. I'm doing one right now that she's helping out with. It's blue, pink, and a little bit of green, and that one's going to be pretty cool.
This story is so cute, and I love what they're doing in Rochester. That was a seventh grader named Nick on KTTC in Rochester. The kids were making friendship bracelets to give to Red Cross volunteers who are helping with Texas flood relief. Rochester Public Schools, they do this summer of service program, which we should get like the Rochester schools on because I think that is a neat idea. Mm-hmm. They took the seventh graders who were in this program to Cascade Creek, which is a memory care community. And it's mostly designed to help the volunteers in Texas, of course, and Anthem Memory Care. They have 20 different communities taking part in the project. But I just love that. I think it's so good for intergenerational friendships and conversations, and to get those middle school kids to the memory care facility to do that. I thought was worth your time. That is awesome. The D Rush Hour News headlines.